and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Radar and Electronic Warfare Drive Signal Processing Innovation. My name is John McHale, Editorial Director with Open Systems Media and Military Embedded Systems Magazine, and moderator for today's event. Our speakers today are Herman Linares, Staff Systems Engineers at Mercury Systems, Roger Hosking, Vice President and Co-Founder of Pentek, Ching Hu, Senior Marketing Manager at Altera, and Darren McCarthy, Aerospace and Defense Marketing Manager at Rohde & Schwarz. Now for some short housekeeping announcements. The eCast today will consume about 35 to 40 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. Before we get going, I want to point out some important buttons on your screen. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. The second important button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to send an email of request for this event. And lastly, you'll find on your console window a button that enables you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a particular question for a certain speaker, please note it in your question, otherwise I will assign them accordingly. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. And please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. This eCast will be posted online today, and an audio podcast will be available as well. Now, and please turn over to our first speaker, Herman Linares. Herman?
Thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Herman Linares. I'm a systems engineer manager here at Mercury Systems in the East Coast. I'm going to talk about the design of radar and EW solutions from a systems perspective. I will start with an overview of new challenges that those types of systems face from an architectural point of view, and then I will describe an implementation example of a state-of-the-art mobile radar application. ISR systems are required to provide enhanced capabilities to be able to handle a growing number of more sophisticated threats. Some of these challenges are a larger amount of sensor data to process, harder to detect and track targets, more demanding swap requirements, these are size, weight, and power requirements, and these in turn involves thermal management and ruggedized solutions. Also, the development of more elaborate countermeasure techniques like jamming and clutter removal, and constraints in communication links. In summary, there is a need for more signal processing and data storage closer to the sensor to accommodate the limited capacity of the communication channels. This in turn impacts the swap requirements for the payload. Here we have a representation of a sensor processing chain. Many people think of Mercury as just a digital signal processing company. Through acquisition, Mercury can now deliver capabilities and products across the entire sensor processing chain. The systems engineers of our professional service group work with our customers to define the right solution for a particular application. For example, by acquiring companies in the microwave, RF, and IF domains, we can build compact, high-density, power-efficient systems that acquire, digitize, and process the information across the whole sensor processing chain. This is the type of capability that we now bring to the market because of our expanded portfolio. Now here is a block diagram of the various segments of electronic warfare. Electronic attack serves to attack enemy personnel, facilities, and equipment by using electromagnetic energy to disable their combat capability. An example of that could be the various jamming techniques. Electronic protection serves to protect personnel, facilities, and equipment from enemy use of electromagnetic energy that degrade, neutralize, and destroy friendly combat capability. An example of this is the implementation, for example, of adaptive beamforming techniques. In summary, electronic protection protects from the effects of the electronic attack. And finally, electronic warfare support, also called ES, typically involves an operational commander that seeks situational awareness, immediate threat recognition, and targeting. This discipline overlaps with signal intelligence segments like ELINT and COMINT that analyzes and identifies the intercepted information. In this slide, we depict the processing chain of a typical radar system. Our focus on this session will be on the front-end digital signal processing section. These are the blocks in yellow in the diagram. Heterogeneous processing enables the selection of the most suitable software and hardware platform to each of the radar digital processing phases. For example, FPGAs offer a very low latency and high parallel processing architecture. Instead, GPUs are also suitable for data-intensive applications, stream and vector processing with floating point processing, but their advantage is that they offer a high-level programming development environment. General-purpose processors, or GPPs, are mostly used for control-intensive applications where branch prediction mechanisms are best utilized. Radar systems are operated to detect, acquire, and track targets. Radar systems are required to support increasingly complex applications with a growing number of faster and smaller targets in a wider area of coverage. In addition to that, newer, more elaborate enemy countermeasure capabilities drive the need for more sophisticated anti-jamming techniques. The digital signal processing subsystem must provide real-time response with high I/O bandwidth and superior processing performance to be able to handle these increasing data loads and processing requirements. Mercury's radar subsystem building blocks allowed for a modular configuration of the system to provide the best balance of I/O and processing performance in a very efficient processing and power densities. Passive and active phased array antennas have significantly increased the amount of radar data that is fed into the DSP stage, the digital signal processing stage, thus providing a much more flexible, multipurpose, and powerful capabilities to the system. This translates into higher resolution and faster response to find and track multiple targets. We're going to get into the use case now. This is a story about an application-ready subsystem Mercury delivered for a defense program. Mercury had been in discussions with this particular customer for quite some time. This customer was completely aware that in-house expertise didn't exist for the successful development of this project. There were several unusual and unique requirements for this program. As mentioned, strong thermal management expertise is required typically in these systems, as the system is mounted on a truck and can operate in rugged environment with extreme weather. In addition, this customer had hundreds of thousands of lines of legacy radar code, which they were required to maintain going forward. And all of this needed to be accomplished in a very tight timetable. Mercury delivered a best-of-breed open integrated solution consisting of Mercury, customer-furnished equipment, and third-party equipment. Mercury's standard product line building blocks are integrated together with customer-furnished equipment and third-party technology to make the best possible solution for our customers' demanding requirements. Our systems and integration team worked closely with the customer and became the customer trusted advisor on just about every aspect of the subsystem development and delivered a system within 9 months of a start. Now, let's spend some time looking at the different components of this subsystem. The system features the following components. There are three Intel multi-core general-purpose mobile processor boards in OpenVPX format with digital I/O control FPGA XMC cards for control and scheduling tasks. Those are shown in light blue in the diagram. Then there are four Intel multicore general purpose processor boards for mixed control and vector data signal processing. Those are the dark blue slots on the right side of the chassis. Then we had three GPU MXM carrier boards populated with two GPU MXMs on each for double precision floating point vector processing operations. And we had also three XMC card carrier boards populated with two A2D analog to digital converter and FPGA XMC cards on each for analog front end and low latency front end digital signal processing. Those are shown in a red-purple color on the picture. And finally, we had two S3O 10GE switch cards to provide the open VPX fabric connectivity. Those are in tan color on the left of the picture. The integration of such a variety of heterogeneous functions is possible due to the flexibility of the OpenVPX architecture and the high level of integration achieved in the system building blocks. And with this, I conclude my presentation and I pass control to John for the next presenter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ramon. Now we'll turn it over to Mr. Roger Hosking of Pentek. Roger?
Yes, hi. Thanks, John. And the last presentation was an interesting introduction to what I'm going to talk about too, because we're going to be talking about the same kinds of issues at the board level. And Pentek has been involved in making boards for radar and communication electronic warfare for over 25 years now. And what we found that is quite appropriate for improving the performance of these systems are listed here. We always need additional DSP resources because the waveforms are more complicated. We need faster interfaces to move the wider bandwidth signals through the different system interfaces. We also need to buffer this data with larger and faster memories, for example, transient capture operations. The wider bandwidth signals also need faster A-to-D converters with sampling rates over 3 gigahertz. We then also need to do digital down conversion using these very wideband signals so that we can get the signals into a form that's suitable for digital signal processing. And, of course, for multi-element arrays, which is very common in radar, we need to do high-speed multi-channel synchronization. And finally, in order to improve the versatility of these systems, we want to be able to do a runtime reconfiguration of the FPGAs via PCI Express. So we're going to talk about how all of these different strategies can be integrated into board-level products. Well, first of all, in order to boost the DSP resources, we're taking advantage of the Vertex 7 from Xilinx. And this slide really shows you one metric, the number of logic cells in the succeeding generations of Xilinx parts from the Vertex 4, 5, and 6, and then up to the 7, which is shown in the back in the green color. So you can see increasing resources based on each generation, largely achieved through shrinking the geometry of the cell from 90 nanometers down to 28 nanometers now. Vertex 7 also benefits from having a new process that reduces the power per function, typically half the power associated with the previous generation of Vertex 6. Now, this slide shows you the relative comparisons on a scale of 0 to 100%. They've all been normalized. And the top six metrics really show you resources, the number of block, the number of DSP engines, for example, the number of logic cells. And you can see in the blue is the Vertex 6 largest part resources, and then the yellow is Vertex 7. So you can see there's been a significant increase in the density of function within the part, as well as the speed of these interfaces. The bottom three bars really show the power reduction. There's three different metrics. The I/O power, which is the power associated with an I/O pin, has dropped by 30%. The dynamic power, this is the switching power, has dropped by 25%. And the static power, this is the leakage current, has dropped by 65%. So overall, it's a weighted average of about 50%. So these are really nice metrics to take advantage of going into the higher performance design. So we're going to take a look at one such design right now. This is our 7141, which we just released about a month ago. This is based on a 3.6 gigahertz 12-bit A to D converter at the front end. We have coupled through to the everything is connected to the FPGA, the Vertex 7, which is in the center of the diagram. We've got a bank of 1,600 megahertz speed DDR SDRAMs. There's a total of 4 gigabytes. We've got a precision triggering system up in the upper left. We've got a PCI Express Gen 3 interface going down to the system interface. And we've put quite a bit of IP inside of the FPGA to make it easier for radar applications to be developed. And specifically, one of the pieces of IP that we've developed has been a digital down converter that operates at this very high speed of 3.6 gigahertz. It's actually done by dividing the 3.6 gigahertz stream into 4 and then 8 different parallel streams that each enter the FPGA, so that we use a what we call a polyphase digital down converter, where each of those 8 streams is running at 1/8 of the speed of the 3.6 gigahertz A to D, and they're running in parallel. So we have a tuning range of DC to 3.6 gigahertz. We have a bandwidth programmable from 90 megahertz to 360 megahertz. This covers some very nice high bandwidth signals that we find becoming more and more important for radar. The output is then finally combined in the lower right into a single multiplexed IQ baseband stream that is ready to go into your DSP algorithm. And there's a little blow-up there in the upper right that shows that each of those green DDC blocks actually contains its a separate local oscillator, mixer, and low-pass filter. Again, 8 of these all operating in parallel. Now, in terms of the memory, we said memory is important because we need to capture transients. We need to capture transients in real time, buffer them. We could also use the memory for doing things like digital delay lines. In this case, we have 4 banks of 1 gigabyte as DDR3 SDRAM, and the transfers are running at 1,600 megatransfers per second. That gives you 6.4 gigabytes per second for each of the 4 memories, or a total of 25.6 gigabytes per second between the memories and the FPGA. Really a very important and critical requirement for many radar applications. The next section is the multi-channel synchronization and triggering function, and this allows us to have multiple modules synchronously triggered so that the exact clock on all of them across all of the modules captures the very first sample in a block. And this is necessary for beamforming and phased array antennas. We do this through a very high-speed bus, which we call our micro-sync bus. This was developed to support these very high clock rate A to D converters. It works extremely well and allows us to synchronize a large number of these modules for multi-channel acquisition. And we also accept an external 10 megahertz reference for as a system reference, so that all of the clocks that are generated and the triggers and so forth are all phase locked to a 10 megahertz reference. This timing solution can simplify the development of systems, because often we find the timing part of the system, the clocking and triggering and so forth, is sometimes the biggest challenge. So a lot of that is taken away from our customers because we provide such a nice infrastructure for this function. The speed of these high-speed applications with the very high rate A to D converters requires sometimes a system interface that allows you to get the data from the front end out through into the system for, let's say, DSP processing downstream. In order to implement that, we take advantage of the PCI Express Gen 3 interface that's part of the Vertex 7 FPGA. We also provide IP inside that implements 4 32-bit streaming DMA controllers that allow you to very easily, from your user application, move data through in either direction to and from the PCI Express interface to the rest of the system. This really simplifies your application development, because everybody needs to move data. You can work on your developing your application without having to worry about the data movement function by taking advantage of these existing DMA channels and PCI Express interfaces that we provide. The Gate Express PCI Express Configuration Manager is a facility that we've added outside of the FPGA that provides kind of a secondary PCI Express capability to allow the PCI Express host, this would be your single board computer or your motherboard, to directly rewrite the entire contents of the Vertex 7 FPGA from top to bottom, including its PCI Express interface. This completely eliminates the need for partial reconfiguration or other strategies. It allows you to completely replace the contents of the FPGA without needing to reboot your system, without needing to restart your system. It eliminates the need for JTAG cables during development. And most importantly, it allows you to reconfigure the FPGA during runtime to support different modes of operation without having to turn the system down or reboot the system. A really powerful resource that virtually all of our customers find extremely, extremely useful. So just to summarize here, we're saying that the new family of Onyx Vertex 7 products really take advantage of a lot of the things that Vertex 7 adds, like the additional resources, DSP engines, the power reduction, the faster interfaces to the system with PCI Express Gen 3, faster memory interfaces, 1600 megahertz, and then a lot of the things that we've added, like the IP for the digital down converter, the Gate Express, PCI Express configuration manager we just talked about, the synchronization function that does precise triggering across a lot of channels. So this is just a very quick look at an exciting new product that we just introduced last month, and we invite you to visit our website for more details. And thank you very much, and I'll turn it back over to John.
Thank you, Roger. And now it's time for our next speaker, Ching Hu of Altera, and I please ask you to also continue to send in your questions. And once we're done with our final speaker's presentation, which is Darren McCarthy, we will take right to the Q&A. Ching, take it away.
Great. Thank you, John. So just this is a great transition going from Mercury system level view to Pentax board level, and now we're down at the component level. So as the title of my presentation suggests, we'll be looking at how floating points and DSP solutions greatly enhance radar and EW capabilities, improve system design cycle time. So Altera serves a very diverse customer base in the aerospace and defense market. Here are some of the patterns that we see in system design challenges related to radar and electronic warfare systems. System requirements change throughout the product development or program lifecycle. These changes can cause significant ripple effects that impact schedule and cost. Each development phase has its own design flow based on their deliverables and tools. These design flows are often not well integrated or even uniform and can introduce delays or propagate undetected problems. One of the major themes that we've seen recently is to increase development efficiency through IP portability and reuse, but it has many barriers to be truly successful. Most radar and EW systems require high performance, where GFLOPS per watt is one of the metrics used to determine system performance and efficiency. One of the challenges here is to how to crank out the most GFLOPS per watt and still meet the size, weight, power, and cost requirements. Last but not least is the DSP algorithm performance. With the increasing complexity of attack and countermeasures, the system designers are spending more time developing and fine-tuning multiple algorithms to adapt to possible scenarios. This may require hardware-level optimization that's often not in the domain expertise of the system designers. So in a typical DSP system-level design cycle, there are three major phases: development, implementation, and verification. Each one of these phases has its own tools, its own language, its own methodology, and in many cases represents a separate functional team. Typically, the algorithm team will develop the algorithm and throw it over the wall to the RTL implementation and simulation team, who then throw it over the wall to the system level verification team. And somehow, all of this has to correlate back to the beginning. with Altera, the DSP tool, which is an add-on to the MATLAB Simulink, this barrier is removed. It allows a uniform development tool across the stages of development. The algorithm team can easily create an algorithm and have the DSP builder to generate the RTL code and does the placement route and use the same vector in front end and do the system verification in the back end. So as you can see, this ties in all three phases in one shot. The additional benefits of the DSP builder is its ability to allow the designer to target different device families without changing your design. You can also think of this as a way to future-proof your design when the next generation chip is ready. Simply select a new device and the tool will do the rest. A good application to this feature is adopting the same design for large or small FPGA based on a product requirement easily. The level of rework required to retarget different devices without this tool can be very costly and introduce huge schedule risk. And because DSP Builder can span all three stages of the development, it can easily go from algorithm to verification in a fairly quick term with low risk and with good transparency throughout the entire life cycle. So now let's look at a system design challenge from a different angle. Here we look at system development efficiency from a system performance view. A typical flow for a system model starts with a continuous time mathematical model, which is often assumed to be operating in floating point domain. But in many system development process, a specialized team will take the mathematical model and port it over to a quantized or fixed point domain. This step will introduce many unwanted artifacts and will restrict the performance of the systems. The final phase is the implementation of this fixed point model. Okay. So now, however, the quantization step can be limited if the end system can handle the floating points. Very simple. This will remove many of the system performance limitations introduced by the quantization step and reduce the development cycle time. So now let's look at an example how floating point matters in actual system performance. We know that radar EW signals have very wide dynamic ranges. A large fixed point matrix operation can easily result in over or underflow if the dynamic range of the system was not carefully considered in the quantization step. In the chart to the left, a limited dynamic range would truncate some of the signal peaks. Now, if you look at with a floating point implementation, the increased dynamic range may indicate the true intensity of the signal. In some cases, this could make the difference in a successful or a failed mission. And with Altera's floating point technology, you can achieve more than 50 plus gigaflops per watt. So you get the best floating point power to performance ratio. So traditionally, floating points are known to be used in CPU, GPUs, and DSPs, and all of them complies to IEEE 754 floating point format. But for FPGA, floating point operation is not optimized due to excessive logic use and unsustainable routing requirements and logic clock rates. And this has really discouraged the use of FPGA for floating point operations. Altera's floating point solution uses a concept called fused data path. A fused data path supports IEEE 754 only at functional boundaries. So within a function or data path, the circuit design is optimized, which results in a fusing of various floating point operations. The inefficiency of traditional floating point FPGA design is partially due to the deeply pipelined nature and the wide arithmetic structure of the floating point operators, which creates a large data path latency and routing congestion. Here we can see the optimization in a few more detail. The IEEE 754 Mantissa are 23 bits for a single position, are unsigned, and have an explicit one implied. This is replaced by standard signed 2's complement number of 27 or 36 bits. We can expand the Mantissa width since this is a configurable logic. So we can use the 27 by 27 or 36 by 36 multipliers for both Mantissa and normalization multiplication. Since we have extra bits, the decimal needed is not to be in the leftmost position, but we can tolerate leading zeros incurred during floating point operations. Furthermore, the special conditions such as invalid number of or infinities are applied only at the boundaries, not at the operation. So with the Altera's DSP Builder, the user is offered 7 different position options to meet different project needs and still be optimized. For many cases, a single position is not enough, whereas double position may be an overkill. And that's why we offer the other position options. One can easily see that the variable position floating point provides the optimal use of logic and resource here. So building on top of the floating point technology, we offer an optimized 34 math.h library functions. This is in addition to the simple ones like add, subtract, multiply, or mux, etc. The implementations we develop here offer the best logic efficiency and lowest latency. I will highly recommend a quick read at a great technical paper written by our Bogdan Paska in the link below to learn more about our methodologies. By the way, that paper is an award-winning paper, so it's definitely worth a good read. Suffice to say that our optimized set of functions based on a floating point technology, the system engineers can really easily extract the most integration and best performance from the Altera FPGAs. So beyond just building fundamental technology and solutions, we also look at system-level solutions to further enable our aerospace and defense customers. We built comprehensive reference designs, specifically for radar and electronic warfare architectures. We can think of these as reference designs as a form of COTS, where they can be used as is or easily configured to fit specific project needs. In fact, as a derived value from these reference designs we create, we generate parameterized IP used in the reference design. To name some of the reference designs we create here are digital beamforming, space-time adaptive processing, and Doppler processing. These are all very complex processing nodes. If you have specific interest in finding out more about these or other reference designs on radar or electronic warfare systems, please contact me directly. So in conclusion, we have seen how DSP Builder can mitigate challenges for requirement changes, system-level design flow, integration, and IP portability and reusability. Altera's floating point technology can greatly improve system performance and also design time. From a performance to power ratio perspective, I will highly recommend a quick read of our latest BDTI benchmark paper on Stratix 5. There's one version published in October and there's a new version published in February. Last but not least is that we have the most complete math.h functions with optimized footprint and low latency. These enhancements in the base level building blocks can greatly enhance the DSP algorithm's performance. This concludes my session, and thank you for your time. I would like to hand the podium back to John.
Thank you very much, Ching. As I said before, keep those questions coming in, and once our next speaker is done, we will go right to our Q&A. And speaking of our next speaker, Darren McCarthy of Rohde & Schwarz, please take it away.
Hey, thank you very much there, John. My name is Jerry McCarthy. I am the Aerospace and Defense Technical Marketing Manager for Rohde & Schwarz America. And today I'm going to focus on the test tools for RF tests and analysis for the embedded designer. Just a little bit about Rohde & Schwarz. Rohde & Schwarz is a privately owned German company. We've been in the test business for about 80 years now, and being a private company allows us to focus and invest on long-term business fields. Our business fields that relate to aerospace and defense are test measurement. We actually have some broadcasting, which includes high-powered power amplifier technology, secure communications, as well as radio monitoring and radio location technologies. Primarily, the technologies and the solutions that I'm going to talk about today come out of both the test measurement as well as the radio monitoring location services offerings. So first off, I think we've had some discussion today about some of the trends in radar and electronic warfare test. Really, there are two major things that impact tests and test equipment and how you approach tests. That would be the active electronically scanned antenna, or the ESA technologies, as well as direct digital synthesis and a lot of the bits and bandwidth and processing power discussions that we've had here today. For this discussion, I'm going to really focus on the latter, the direct digital synthesis technologies, and really the impact of some of the modern modulation interpulse techniques such as frequency and phase modulation on pulse, chirps, and polyphase codes have on the test tools. Certainly the benefits of direct digital synthesis is an improved resolution, target resolution that you get with frequency and modulation on pulse. You also get frequency agility with the ability to tune in your baseband such that you don't have to rely on hardware switching aberrations and timing. The way this impacts test is really both in the generation and the analysis, moving away from simple descriptions of what a pulse is, the commonly called the pulse descriptor word, into a more complex IQ data description word, or IQDW. Also defining the environments and on how we approach test. When we talk about radar test and signal analysis versus electronic warfare test and signal analysis, and in a radar test environment, we're really talking about the design, development, and manufacturing. In most cases, the signal is known or controlled, and you have some type of electronic coupling to the device under test, as well as some means of getting a reference timing or pulse trigger capability. A lot of the measurements you're pretty familiar with, signal and spectrum analysis, modulation, frequency, phase, domain, linear, interpulse measurements, as well as pulse-to-pulse measurements, frequency, and phase noise for component analysis. In the EW and signal analysis arena, really what we're talking about here is collection and collection analysis systems, such as ELINT systems. Often the signals are unknown, and the analysis is done offline. The environment is really a multi-emitter or over-the-air environment. You're not necessarily always capturing the strongest signal of interest in a panoramic view, especially in a multi-emitter environment. And so you need to be very concerned about the different types of solutions and the components on the front end of your RF hardware, including the type of antenna, directionality, as well as gain, the performance of the front end of the receiver, making sure you're not overloading your front end, as well as the recording of the signal with gapless, seamless recording capability. As this impacts the analyzer, I'd like to talk a little bit about the architecture of the spectrum analyzer and the signal analyzer and talk about both the capabilities and maybe some of the limitations of one versus the other. The traditional spectrum analyzer, people are probably familiar with this, an envelope detector, a sweep generator, and you're basically plotting amplitude versus frequency. Traditionally, this has been really well used over time and good for looking at, you know, CW, pulse CW, FM CW, simple types of modulation technologies or pulse descriptor word information. It's very difficult, since you're not getting the IQ down conversion, to look at frequency and phase modulation on pulse. And you also have to be careful about the types of measurements that you do to make sure you take a look at the pulse width and resolution bandwidth ratios to make sure that we don't desensitize the signal of measurement. Also, typically in a zero span mode, when you're looking at a signal of interest, you might be tuned to a center frequency. So therefore, if you're trying to look at a frequency hopping or frequency agile signal, it is not always at the center frequency, and so the results that you would get in the zero span mode would not suffice for all signal conditions. When we look at a vector signal analyzer, what we're talking about here, very similar to some of the hardware descriptions that were talked about earlier, is we have an RF bandpass preselection with some type of heterodyne down conversion, and you're really digitizing with a wideband ADC, the signal of interest. So therefore, you capture the entire pulse and pulse information and allows you to display a lot of the signal parameters. Today's modern spectrum analyzers often offer a hybrid, basically both the benefits of the swept capability and the dynamic range that you get with that, as well as the vector signal analysis for pulse and pulse type measurements. This type of technology allows for a bandwidth of information to be captured over time. If we look at the picture that's described here, you'll see that not only can you see the pulse and the pulse information in a polychrome display here, instantly it gives you some idea or some information on the pulse duration and the scan patterns by looking at the waterfall. So these new tools really do help give you some insight very, very quickly to the complex interpulse analysis that's needed for further pulse analysis. When we look at the details of tools for radar tests, in this example, we're showing the Rohde-Schwarz FSW with option K6 for pulse analysis. This actually has over 40 scalar and vector pulse and pulse train measurements. The information is captured in a capture buffer, gives you a quick time overview of the pulse and pulse train that you're looking at. The pulse results can instantly be displayed and viewed and exported, as well as statistical analysis can be run on the different signals, as well as pulse and pulse train interpulse characteristics can instantly be displayed in different types of view. When we're looking at examples of EW, electronic warfare tests and analysis, this solution is based on the ESMD with our technical pulse analysis software. And to help with people doing collection and analysis, the test results are kept in a project window tree as shown in this display. The spectrogram gives you instant access to viewing the area of interest. You can control the hardware or the recorded data and view the signal in multiple different ways, either tabular or graphic. And the pulse analysis view, such as the scattergram, gives you at a very, very quick view the level, the frequency, pulse width, and PR time to be able to really look at some of the modes, different modes or interpulse characteristics that are going on within the signal and be able to record those and timestamp those with respect to when they've been collected. So Rohde-Schwarz has a complete set of radar test and electronic warfare test solutions. From a test perspective, we have spectrum analyzers, signal generators, network analyzers, as well as full turnkey solutions for module and chamber testing. And from the over-the-air perspective and electronic warfare test and solutions, receivers, antennas, directional antennas, recording systems, and analysis software to really help with people whose job it is to look at the signals over the air. For more information, please take care to visit us at our URL at www.rohdeschwarz.usa. And back to you, John.
Thank you very much, Darren, and thank you as well to our other speakers. Now it is time for our Q&A session. So the Q&A session will go on for approximately another 15 minutes until the end of the webcast. So while it's going on, I ask you to continue sending your questions, and we will get to as many as we can. Now for our first question from the audience. To Roger Hosky, we have purchased 78621 cards and would like to know when the 78721 will become available.
Okay, since most of you are not familiar with the numbers, the 621 is a Vertex 6 or a Cobalt XMC module. It's a transceiver with 200 megahertz 16-bit A to D converters and 800 megahertz 16-bit D to A converters. The one that the person is asking about, 721, is the Vertex 7 version of the same, and that should be available towards the end of second quarter, so quite soon.
All right, thank you very much. I also have a question for Darren McCarthy here. Darren, can't you use a traditional spectrum analyzer in a zero span to get the same information as a vector signal analyzer?
In zero span mode, we're basically looking at the amplitude versus time-only information. So I think I mentioned we can see the pulse descriptor word or the rise time, pulse width, really if they're within the limitations of the resolution bandwidth. In a swept analysis, your analysis is really limited by the resolution bandwidth, whereas in a vector analyzer, not only do you get the baseband IQ complex waveform, but you also now can see the rise time of the entire IF bandwidth. So much faster signals, much wider bandwidth.
Thank you, Darren. I have a question here for Ching Hu. Can you please give an example of a performance benchmark for Stratix 5?
Sure. Actually, I had the luxury of digging up that paper while waiting for the other presenters. So in one of the BDTI papers that we published, for example, we used a QR decomposition on a Stratix 5 running at one channel, 400 by 400 matrix size with a vector size of 100, we were able to get a 162 gigaflops at running at 26 watts. So that gives you about 6.2 gigaflops per watt. So it's pretty good for that performance.
Thank you, Cheng. Now I've got a question for Roger Hosky. How can I capture radar range rates with a delayed trigger?
Okay, we have an acquisition engine that's built into the IP. It's one of the part of the timing subsystem that allows you to specify a programmable delay from an external trigger and then a acquisition interval or a range gate. You can have up to 64 different descriptors for those different kinds of delays and range gates. So we make it quite easy for you to set up a rather complex scenario for capturing pulses simply by writing parameters into memory-mapped registers.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I have another question here for Cheng. Does the DSP builder generate human-readable VHDL Verilog?
The short answer is yes. So we can actually both export and import. We can export HDL Verilog and VHDL, also import the same. And also keep in mind that we can also have hardware-in-the-loop testing and generate the test benches automatically.
Okay. Got a question here for Darren McCarthy. What kind of timing resolution and accuracy can you get with signal analyzers?
So I'd like to, I guess, take part the answer two ways, resolution and accuracy. Resolution really depends upon your sampling time, and that's really dependent upon the specific solution. You can have bandwidths from the tens of megahertz, hundreds of megahertz, up to a gigahertz. And certainly if you're sampling with a digitizer in the multi-gigahertz range, at a gigahertz, you'll have a nanosecond timing stamp with vector IQ sampling. That's about 2 nanosecond timing resolution. A typical vector signal analyzer might have 400 megasample and 160 megahertz bandwidth, so you get a 5 nanosecond timing resolution. But the accuracy really depends on several things. And it really depends on what the timing accuracy, what you're trying to measure. So if you take a difficult measurement such as pulse-to-pulse phase noise, pulse-to-pulse noise, you really have variables such as phase noise, signal noise ratio, as well as your software interpolation algorithms. And so for specification we tend to specify both our software and our hardware together for a solution. And an example of a pulse-to-pulse phase measurement at 20 gigahertz, you're probably around 4/10 of a degree phase angle error for a pulse-to-pulse phase measurement in our FSW.
Thank you, Darren. We've got a question here for Roger Hosking. Roger, is it necessary to have FPGA development to use Pentek products?
Not necessary. We have a lot of customers who are buying the product and using the IP that we supply as standard factory IP to achieve everything they need in their application. At the same time, we do provide an optional FPGA design kit, which allows our customers to extend the functions inside the FPGA to do custom DMODs or algorithms that they may choose to do. So it's not necessary unless you need to.
Okay. I've got another question here for Ching Hu. I believe that the quantization step is still present as data must pass via the D to A and then the A to D for radar. How does the floating point affect the choice of these components?
That's a great question. Let me push one slide here to the audience here. So actually, I agree completely with the implied answer in that question, which is really it doesn't. It is truly a fixed point operation there. So if you look in the slide that I have on the screen right now, the fixed point operation is primarily in the front end, which is where the D to A to D sits. But you know, the floating point is really more for the algorithms. That's where the smartness of the radar system or the EW system comes from. So that does not get rid of that. You know, floating point does really not help in the A to D side of it.
Okay. Thank you, Ching. Next question. This one looks like it's for Roger Hosky. Can your products be used for VPX systems?
Yes. All of the XMC module-based products in our Vertex 6 and Vertex 7 lines are available to be applied to a VPX, 3U VPX carrier that we supply. We have several different versions from simple to more complex, and also we can work with third-party single-board computers because XMCs are the industry standard mezzanine card that are compatible with a lot of different other manufacturers, single-board computers or simple carriers.
Thanks, Roger. I have a question here for Herman from Mercury. Does Mercury have products for systems where size, weight, and power, also known as SWAP, are not significant requirements? The reason I'm asking is my organization performs electronic warfare research and our systems can use commercial grade hardware.
Yes, the answer is yes. Mercury offers lab level equipment as well as commercial level products that can be used in a non-ruggedized or non-rugged environment. So I invite the caller to contact our sales department at mercymrcy.com for more information about those systems.
Okay. Thank you, Herman. Another question here for Herman is, how is OpenCL positioned as a software platform for GPU application development, respecting other options?
Yeah, OpenCL has been adopted recently in the last year or so by many companies that plan to develop new applications because of the portability that it offers across multiple platforms. That is the main advantage. It facilitates migration and leverage of code developed for GPGPUs. There is still an evolution on this process. The most famous competitor is the software development environment offered by NVIDIA under the name of CUDA that competes with OpenCL proposed by the consortium of companies like Intel and AMD, and also by NVIDIA. So it's a hard choice. I would say that in terms of moving an old application written in CUDA to OpenCL is not an easy choice. Instead, if you are writing a new application, OpenCL probably is the right choice.
Actually, John, I'd like to – this is Qing from Altera. I'd like to add on to what Herman's been saying, too, is Altera offers OpenCL solutions for FPGAs, and we have a lot of DSP-centric solutions specifically geared towards that. So I think it's not just for GPU or other platform, but FPGA definitely supports that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
You guys are seeing a lot of interest from that from the military space for OpenCL. I've been hearing that, too.
It's huge. The interest is very huge.
Yeah, we are starting to see that. Yeah, that's correct.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Next question is for Darren. Does Rohde & Schwarz have specialized spectrum and signal analyzers for analyzing multi-channel radar systems more easily?
Good query. I was going to go ahead and push another slide to the audience, and this is kind of our conclusion slide. We do have, basic boxes, and really this question kind of depends upon if you're talking about a friendly or an unfriendly multi-channel environment. So I'll assume we're just talking about making measurements of radar. The rack of equipment we have in the small picture here down below is really our some of our phase-coherent multi-channel analysis systems. So from a system perspective, we do have the capability of testing, and this rack of equipment here can actually test up to 10 phase-coherent synchronous RF signals.
Thank you, Darren. Next question would be for Herman. How do GPUs compare to new multi-core embedded GPU hybrid devices in terms of processing performance and power?
Yes, discrete GPUs still hold an edge on three parameters that are critical for embedded systems. One is processing performance, basically what we call gigaflops. The second one is memory bandwidth. GPUs use a much faster memory and wider memory interfaces that allows to implement these much efficient and high-performance memory interfaces. And then the third one is power. The GPUs, particularly the new generations, are all much better in terms of handling power. So for those three reasons, I believe that the discrete GPUs they still offer an advantage respect the standard multi-hybrid devices like the APUs and other products from Intel.
Thank you, Herman.
No problem.
Time for two more questions, one from the audience and then one from me. Last audience question, what operating systems do your software tools support? This is for Roger.
Yes, we do have support for both Windows and Linux, and we find most of our customers are using probably equally split either of those two operating systems. On some products, we do offer VxWorks support. This is a far greater minority these days, so most of our customers are Windows and Linux, and those are supported on all of our products.
Thank you, Roger. Now for the last question, it's kind of for the whole panel. I'd like to start with Roger because he and I have talked about this before. In light of what's going on with the DOD and the budget cuts that are going to come and then if sequestration happens as well, where do you see the industry or the market outlook for the next couple of years in terms of radar and electronic warfare applications? Do you see that funding being steady due to the nature of it and how necessary it is even if we pull back our troops?
Exactly. I think that a lot of the things that will be cut will be in the troops, the bullets, the ships, and perhaps even some deployed personnel. But I think the need for the electronic surveillance, the radar systems, the communication systems, the signal intelligence, signal gathering, all of those are going to be even more important going forward based on the activity that we see around the world right now. So I'm hopeful at least that prediction comes true. It certainly makes sense to me.
Go ahead. Sorry, Darren, how about from the test and measurement area?
So I would agree with that. I'll also say that in the area of education and information dissemination, you're going to have a lot less people going to trade shows and conferences. You're going to have a lot more people attending webinars, searching on the web, and looking for information. And so there's multiple different ways of getting the word out is very important, and activities like this is also important.
Thank you, Darren. Herman or Ching, anything you'd like to add on that? Or
No, just a comment on the budget cuts and the possibility of sequestration that is pretty obvious. I think the most important thing is it's going to affect the time frame, but it's going to delay mostly the programs. I don't think it's going to cancel the critical radar and ISR programs, as Robert mentioned. Some of them might be cut, but I think it's going to be mostly an impact on the schedule, mostly.
So I have a slightly different view. The cut, of course, is going to happen. Retrofilling some of the major programs, we've already seen that. Some of our customers have already been told they're going to have some reduction in orders. However, the balancing side to this is cybersecurity. Cybersecurity involves intelligence, open source intelligence, for example, a huge amount of high-performance computing. And this greatly overlaps with a lot of the back-end radar processing and EW systems. The requirements for bandwidth and latency is very close. And so what we're seeing is a lot of customers are retargeting some of their existing platform for that purpose and without much change to the system designs.
Thank you, Ching. That brings us right up to our time limit for today. I'd like to thank Herman Linares, Roger Hosking, Ching Hu, and Darren McCarthy for speaking. I'd also like to thank Altera, Mercury Systems, Pentek, and Rodian Schwarz for sponsoring today's event. This eCast will be posted online today. Also note that an audio-only podcast version will be available too. I thank you all for attending, and I look forward to seeing you on future Open Systems Media eCasts. Thank you, and goodbye.